Welcome to Smart Water Solutions Podcast. I'm Hakim Elfadil. This is episode number 65. Today I have James Elsmore, the man behind Island Innovation. Island Innovation is like a worldwide club focused on making island communities better and more sustainable. They head these places, talk and work together for greener future. They have events like the Island Finance Forum and the Virtual Island Summit where island folks share their stories, experience, and know-how. In this episode, we're going to talk about the unique water challenges islands face. Every island is different, so there is no one answer for all. So usually in countries, we have standards approach to water issues, but islands may require unique solutions. So moreover, with more tourists visiting islands, there is more pressure on water resources. So we also touch on energy, especially how green energy can help here. And also how island innovation can help startup company in water space to impact island.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, James, that I would like to learn from you, I mean, I was looking to your profile in LinkedIn. It's very interesting, the things that you have achieved so far. And if you don't mind, I would like really to take us with your journey before, you know, bringing island innovation to the real world. Before that, what have you done and what has makes you to bring island innovation to the world?
Mm-hmm. So the idea of island innovation, I was very lucky and fortunate to have had the experience living in a number of different island regions, different island communities. My background originally was renewable energy. That's where I started. And so energy is, of course, a really pressing issue for islands. Most islands have challenges in providing affordable energy access to residents. And I was able to research energy policy in the South Pacific region, so some of the most remote islands in the world. Then also had worked in the Caribbean region and then also in the north of Scotland. So three quite different island regions, whether it's climate, culture, geography. But actually what I was able to see is, a lot of the challenges and a lot of the opportunities that are being talked about in these very different regions are quite similar. And so it basically gave this idea of islands having this common story of shared challenges and opportunities. And so Island Innovation emerged as a platform to really connect islands around the world, to learn from each other, to have different members communicate and share what they're doing, and provide a community in a way that's based on remoteness and based on being spread around the world, using the digital community angles to be able to do that. And so Island Innovation evolved into a blog, event, policy papers that we do now, but then we also deliver services to island governments, regions, NGOs, companies working in these areas on communications and strategy to help them implement projects and benefit from this huge network of people that we've built up.
Yeah, I mean, roughly how many islands across the globe do we have?
That depends on how you count it. I don't know if there's any specific number. I mean, it's tens of thousands, right? If you look at the United Nations small island states, that is around 40. But of course, many of those states are made up of many islands themselves. And then you have countries like Indonesia and the Philippines, which are made up of, I mean, some people don't even know quite how many islands there are in those whole countries, right? So we purposely don't define islands too specifically. The idea is not to say, okay, an island must be smaller than this and have certain population. There are some islands like Greenland, which the biggest island in the world, which are, you know, the size of bigger than most European countries, but have a population of only 55,000 people spread across a huge area. Then you have other islands like, you know, of course, there is this huge diversity, many, many different islands around the world.
I think I'm losing you. Is it right? The internet
Oh,
is
it's fine on my side. I didn't lose you.
Super.
I you want me to record on my side so you have that copy?
Yeah, if you can, that's perfect.
Just
Your
in case.
computer.
Oh, you need to give me permission to record.
Yeah, I think if I give it to you, then I will lose it.
I think we can both record normally.
Yeah, okay.
We do this a lot with Zoom. Yeah, there we go.
Awesome. Okay, fantastic. Super. Yes. And then could you just give us, I mean, the key, let's say, area of focus that you are focusing on sharing between different islands?
So there's a whole range of issues. We broadly look at sustainable development. But that's not just environment. When we think about sustainable development, there's the three key pillars, of course, environment, but also society and economy. And all those three things have to be balanced out. So one of the big issues that I'm interested in is, of course, energy, as I mentioned already, that we look at. But there's also a whole range of other issues. I mean, dependence on tourism and how the impact of tourism affects not just the environment, but also the economy and the society and what it's like to depend on tourism. Waste management, how do you get rid of your waste? Transportation, a whole range of cultural issues that are in common. And then from a policy framework, delivering services when you look at very small populations. How do you, in a country that might be 50,000 people, how do you deliver the same access to education, to health, to all the other government services as a country or that's, you know, 100 million people or more? There are some challenges there. And then, of course, one that is very close to our heart and links into all of these areas is water. Access to clean water and provision of water, and especially how that relates to food security. So I could go on, but I think those are some of the core issues that most islands in some way or another have to deal with.
Yeah, would you walk us through the challenges? Because as you mentioned, when you have economy and then environment and then the stress that you get from the tourism. So first, what are the challenges in terms of water related when you have more stress for different islands from the tourism?
I think, and again, this would depend on the island's geography and where the water comes from. But of course, if you're a very tourism dependent place, tourism, often the expectations are much higher in terms of the amount of water that is used than for locals. And I think often this is one of the challenges that tourists, when they're on holiday, often use far more resources than they would do at home. You know, even silly things, which might not matter, longer showers and baths and whatever it might be. And of course, the expectation for maybe golf courses and gardens that are to a certain standard. All of those things mean that the tourist population uses far more water per capita than locals do. And so meeting those expectations can be a really big challenge. Obviously, if for mountainous islands that have adequate rainfall and are able to manage that, water may not be a problem. So some of the larger islands in the Caribbean, they're able to access water regularly. But then you have islands such as Aruba, Curaçao, which have relatively large populations, a few hundred thousand, and high volumes of tourism, but very little water locally. So often in these situations, the idea of desalination is used. Desalinization is common on some islands. But then, of course, you need to provide energy in order to use desalination. And the cost of energy is very prohibitive. So that, of course, is going to vary from place to place. But I think that it is a critical one. And actually, next year, there's going to be a conference held in the Faroe Islands exactly on this issue. The International Water Resources Association will hold a conference specifically related to water access for islands. I'm an island expert, but I'm not a water specific expert. So I can tell you about how islands might look at this from a policy issue and how this relates into other areas.
Yes, please do. Can you give us some, highlight this point from a policy standpoint?
So I think, just give me a moment. So you want me to talk about how, like what policies islands
exactly,
use?
Yeah. Compared to the land?
I'm not sure I know enough about the water specific policies on this front. This is my worry. I don't feel comfortable in talking as like a water resources expert.
Fine. In terms of if I look to islands compared to compared to normal land, so what is the unique challenge in terms of water that you have witnessed? It's like a pattern. Something is repetitive in islands compared to the normal land. Is it the wastewater is challenging? The groundwater is challenged. A couple of water challenges that I would like to highlight.
I mean, especially for smaller islands, often there is a very low water table. And so there may be places, some islands where, groundwater is drinkable, potable. But to take you to a very extreme example, Tuvalu or Kiribati in the South Pacific, the Maldives also, these are atoll nations where the entire population lies less than 2 meters above sea level. You can imagine immediately the challenge there. Traditionally, water was accessed. There was groundwater available in the atolls. They have these lenses of fresh water that exist. But with climate change and more densely urbanized populations, those waters are either being overtopped and being polluted by seawater, or simply being polluted by a dense population above them. I think those are some of the most extreme examples, and those places are very, very vulnerable for their water supplies. There was drought in Tuvalu and Kiribati in the last couple of years, and emergency desalination was provided in those places. But then again, you have to be able to fuel those that emergency desalination. And often getting the fuel to these most remote communities is extremely expensive and often not always available in adequate quantities on short notice. So I believe what happened is that there was emergency aid was sent from Australia and New Zealand to some of these locations where the water simply ran out. And when you're in a remote location, you don't have that backup available that you do in a mainland location where you can pipe in water from other places. I do see a lot of conflict arising from the use of these water resources. I think that, again, going back to tourism expectations, there have been a number of cases where tourism is exempted from any water regulations. So you see locals put on water rationing, for example, while also seeing that the golf course is still bright and green and being used. And of course, this really creates a lot of tension. And I think within the tourism industry, there's always this tension for many islands that might have tourism represent half of their economy, and it being seen as a necessity economically for locals, but also bringing in these huge challenges around consumption and waste that have to be dealt with, and that includes water.
Well, can you share some initiative or kind of projects that Island Innovation has taken to address some water scarcity or water quality issues around islands in the world?
We don't do those projects directly. I would say that, we don't deliver water specific projects in the island communities. So our role is around building the platform, really. So we have multiple island communities that we work with, and we try and demonstrate solutions from those places. But I don't have. I'd say that this is really the challenge, that there aren't a lot of places that have really cracked this this problem, especially in more arid locations. I mean, some of the islands that really have water challenges would include Cape Verde in West Africa, the Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao in the Southern Caribbean, parts of the Pacific as well that have very arid climates. And really, beyond desalination, there is no there are few adequate solution opportunities that exist. I know that there are various different companies, and I'm not able to name them, not my area, that are looking in at specific solutions that they're deploying, but I haven't seen any of those deployed on mass scale yet. We often get approached by entrepreneurs and inventors looking to deploy those solutions. And I always find them very, very interesting. But what is normally the challenge, I think, for most of the islands is access to finance. So even if the solution, these technical solutions exist, who is going to pay for them and how are those going to be funded? And so again, that's why we kind of take this systems approach when we're looking at island issues, that even if you can, in theory, solve a water crisis with some new technology that goes beyond desalination, how are you going to pay for it? And how are you going to fuel it? And how are you going to pay for the fuel? To me, are some of the big problems that then step in a way. And I think that's the kind of point that we get involved.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, it's specifically for a startup company to first to have a partner to work with. It's very interesting as a partner to work with. And the second is, as you said, to have a finance, to have, you know, who is going to pay for their solution once it's deployed. I mean, just an idea for the audience to understand. So how Island Innovation Platform work when it comes, as you said, to deploying new water technologies?
So just to go back to your comment about startups, I think that solution companies like this often make some fatal errors when they approach island governments. They might have the perfect solution, but actually what often happens is that you can imagine the minister dealing with water issues on the island has people every couple of days knocking on his door, pitching this great solution that's going to save that island and solve the problem. What many of these island governments are lacking is a way to really also, sift through these different projects that are coming. They're often very reluctant to take cutting edge technology. I mean, if you have a brand new solution that has not been trialed anywhere else, don't go to an island government and say, hey, we want to try it here, because they've seen too many failed projects that have not worked and they don't want another one. So you really have to take a proven concept somewhere else, often to the islands, or arrive with the funding to be able to do it. Because again, that's going to be your second problem. If you're able to show that a project is technically and financially viable, you need that seed investment to be able to invest in that. So the way that we work is on two forms. We have our platform, which we release news, blogs, and policy papers every week, and we share information really just as a knowledge platform. But we also have key events throughout the year. So in September, we have our Virtual Island Summit. This is an annual virtual gathering of 10,000 island stakeholders from all over the world, where we talk about a whole range of the different issues that I mentioned before, including water, but beyond that. And that's the idea of that would be, okay, we're going to take an issue like water. We get representatives from the Caribbean, from the Pacific, from Africa, from the Arctic, sharing what their challenges are and how they approach them. And I think that's really important, because I think there was a history of often island communities and governments dealing with these problems and not able to see that problem might have already been solved by someone else on a neighboring island or an island across the world. So we just really try and build those digital bridges, I call them, to help island stakeholders talk to each other, share ideas, and implement projects. Our role, we don't implement projects ourselves, but often we do consult private companies or island governments that are looking for solutions, need help on bringing together those different pieces. So connecting in a policy expert with the academic researcher that's working on a project, and then the financier who's got the funds to be able to solve the problem. Because normally when there is a challenge, the solutions to challenge like this, I think they're not just technological. And that's where a lot of startups go wrong. They think, we've solved the problem with this technology, therefore everyone should be coming to us and we want it. And they don't understand that first they need to communicate what they're doing and show actually how they're doing is relevant to a broader audience, and not just talk engineering speak, but talk some things that can be understood by the policymakers, et cetera. Then they need to think, okay, where, like, even if this works technologically, what cultural shifts need to happen? Because often there is a cultural shift, even moving from fossil fuels to renewable energy. That requires some kind of cultural change in ways. There's a financial shift that's needed. Then maybe there's a social shift. There's all these other things. And of course, policy. Sorry, that was the other thing I wanted to mention. There needs to be a policy shift. All of these things need to move. And this is not just islands, but often you can see the process more easily on islands in order to be able to adopt new technology. And I think that sometimes gets forgotten. And our role here is to try and be the communicator between the different people working on these different parts of the puzzle and trying to bring them together.
I think it's very challenging. It's very interesting. And then I like the way how you mentioned that. Also, I learned recently, like, if you want to solve, for example, water, it's not always solved by one technology if you focus only on water. You need to focus, as you mentioned, on even on other discipline, like climate, like environment, like the fishing, like the ground, which kind of plant that you are planting in your island, the stress of the tourism, the finance, so many components, you bring them together, and so many experts, you bring them in one table, you know. Would you just, if any projects have you in that you have done in the past, would you give us, you know, some feeling, some idea, how challenging is that, and then how your platform is really helping those kind of projects to be realized in the real world? Just one or two examples.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely true what you say. What makes it interesting in an island context is that you can see those different parts more easily. Doesn't mean it's easier to fix them, but, you know, making that change in the scale of a country like the US or the UK is one thing. Making it on a small country with a few hundred thousand people is another. You can see who the players are more easily and how they work together. And you can see who are the blockers and who are solving them. As I say, it doesn't mean it's easier to solve always, but I think there is taking that system approach for islands does have an opportunity for the islands to be the leaders putting forward these ideas at the front. So in the renewable energy sector, for example, islands have, in general, the highest cost of electricity for the consumer in the world. And so that's a problem, but then it's also an opportunity to be the first adopter of renewable energy. So we worked with an organization called the Pacific Island Development Forum in the South Pacific that was leading some of these conversations around transitioning to renewable energy in those islands. Each island has a very different context, but they all have very expensive electricity. If you have expensive electricity, it then stops you from doing things like the desalination plants, but also having any form of industry or agriculture which is competitive, because your energy cost is always going to be more expensive than perhaps importing food from a place that doesn't have those expenses. So that impacts the whole economy.
Why is that expensive? Is it because of transport?
The biggest thing is this: the economies of scale, because you're doing everything on a smaller scale. So your fixed costs are higher, and then you have, ultimately, that's passed on to the consumer. So imagine if you're farming chickens, and those chickens require all the electronics that go with the big barn. Your fixed costs are quite high because you're paying, your costs are quite high because you're needing to pay for all this energy usage. Okay, importing something has a cost, but actually shipping is a relatively small cost compared to other things. So you have a situation in the Pacific and in the Caribbean where often it's far cheaper to import meat from Australia or the US than to try and grow vegetables or rear those animals locally. And that has a big impact on food security, because then if you're importing 90% of your food, then you're really kind of putting a risk in the future of, you know, if a global pandemic happens and you're worried that all your supply chains are going to be cut. A lot of those islands were 2 weeks away from having zero food. And actually, at the start of the pandemic, there was a lot of fear that the supply chains had collapsed and that food wasn't coming. Thank God we were in a situation where that didn't happen, and that luckily the supply chains did hold up. But, you know, it was a very precarious situation.
And in terms of water, I mean, most of the island, they have their own kind of own water system supplied treatments with their own energy. So it's not high risk for them.
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
I mean, in terms of water treatments, most of the island, they have their own water treatment supply, I would say.
Yeah, they have to. They have to have some kind of local treatments. And of course, the geography of the island is going to impact exactly what that looks like. But I know in a lot of countries also you have an interesting situation where if you depend on tourism and you depend on clean beaches and good coral reefs, that might be at odds with your wastewater disposal. A lot of islands still dispose of their water in the ocean. But so there are all these other different conflicts on the systems level that need to be taken into account, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, knowledge, or let's say know-how sharing between islands in terms of treating water, in terms of, as you mentioned, treating water before discharging the wastewater to the sea, protecting the environment. So all those things, how are they shared between islands through the platform? Is it something that they need to pay for, or?
No, we don't charge anything. We mostly, I think the main area is through our events. So we started the Virtual Island Summit. This year is the fifth Virtual Island Summit. We started it before COVID, when the idea of virtual events on Zoom was relatively novel still. It's amazing to think how much changed in a few years. But it still makes sense for us, because we're able to have in the same, quote, room, Fiji, Jamaica, Greenland, and Tasmania, all sharing an approach. We'll invite speakers. For attendees, it's free to attend. We really try and keep it open. And we have a whole range of people, from individuals doing grassroots local projects to government ministers signing in to learn from each other. And we also publish policy papers. So we work with, we have an academic council, and we work with island-based universities to help deploy academic research and make it more accessible to policymakers. That's on a whole range of different subjects. We did a lot around tourism and also responses to COVID, but we work on a variety of different areas for those policy papers. So we keep that free. In December this year, in 2023, we'll be also working at the COP28. So the annual climate conference that happens every November, December, representatives from all the world's countries come together to work on climate change. That is, of course, a critical issue for islands, and water, as well as many other things, play into that. And so we also offer a platform there at COP28 to really highlight some of the issues for islands. And I would say that the climate adaptation is huge for most islands. How are they going to, you know, we're assuming now that climate change is already happening, and whatever we do, it's still going to happen on some level. These islands need to adapt, and they need to find ways for their local population to live with a bigger climate. And of course, access to reliable and clean water is one of the SDGs and is a critical for many island communities. So as the climate warms up, how are they going to pay the costs needed for adapting to the new reality that they're going to face? So that covers a range of different issues beyond just rising sea levels. And so we work with some of the island delegations at the COPs every year to really raise and highlight the voice of islands in these forums.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, it's very interesting when you mention also the way how the startup, when they approach, they need to keep something in their minds. And I would like to ask you, based on your experience, and then I'm sure, I mean, new startup entrepreneur, they're listening to this podcast. So what would be like general rule of thumb when they approach treating water in Ireland. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you bring water solution to, let's say, oil and gas industry or semiconductor, you can be fancy, expensive, whatever, complicated, it's fine because you have the labors, you have the money, you have everything there. But my experience, maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, for the islands, the things, they should be very simple, they should not be very complicated, and they should be like, because I think islands in terms of treating wastewater or treating the water desalination, they don't need very advanced, very fancy technology in that sense, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that especially for smaller or more remote islands, it could be a great solution. But if it's going to break and someone from needs to fly in from New York to fix it, then it's not practical, right? Is it something where local people living there can easily be trained to fix it? Or is it something that requires a PhD in astrophysics to be able to operate, right? That's going to be a big implication on whether it is successful in the long term. There are so many projects that were funded by well-meaning aid organizations that operate for 6 months and then break and then sit there and are not fixed. You know, it's the reality. So I think that's critical, that it's something that is able to operate in perpetuity without needing too much technical outside input. It's got to be something with a long lifespan. Is it something that needs replacing every 3 years? Well, then where do you actually put that waste? You know, this is one of the challenges that we're going to face with renewable energy that has a 20 to 25 year lifespan. At the end of that lifespan, what do you actually do with all those solar panels and batteries? It is solvable, of course. We'll need to solve it, but it's an extra challenge for that. And I think also working with the local organizations, you know, there's going to be a utility and a ministry that is in charge of dealing with these issues. And these people have been doing this for decades in some cases. They're going to know what has been tried in the past and what hasn't worked. And I think that's a critical mistake of going in and being and saying, okay, we've got the solution, you just need to listen to us and adopt it. Of course, that's not going to work. So it needs to have been trialed and demonstrated that it works, not just technologically, but financially and, for want of a better word, socially, in having the local resources there. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is that, of course, if you're going into a local context, often there's going to be someone or a group that is making a lot of money off the status quo. So there is going to be resistance. This is unfortunate as well, and often applies with electricity. There are many cases, interested groups that are quite happy with the situation. They're quite happy with a scarcity situation where they can charge a lot of money. And so understanding who has that control and who, where that power structure lies is very important. It really saddens me often to see solutions that could benefit everyone being blocked by a handful of people who would rather see things stay as they are because that's how they make money. But again, that's not necessarily unique to islands by any means.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I think it's almost everywhere. But for the island, based on your experience, if you take all those stakeholders, like the policymakers, like the governments, like those lobbies, if we put them like that, mm-hmm. Do you see that to realize something valuable for the environment and for the people, it goes faster than a big country? I mean, comparing island to big country, I would assume yes, but yeah, it can
go faster. Okay. It doesn't always, and that's again not that that can be because of the resource availability. I mean, thinking about an island government, let's say there's a Ministry of Water Resources or a Department of Water Resources. You might go there and have a whole department, which in a large country could be thousands of people, being run by 6 or 7 people. So people will often go there and be frustrated and say, oh, well, no one wants to listen to my idea or no one's, you know, interested. But you have a dozen people who are doing the jobs often of multiple people. and are just trying to survive and make sure they can do the bare minimum. So I think this is often a challenge, is that the people working in government or whichever the utility or whichever operation, the resources just aren't always there to innovate. They're just trying to stay above water and do what they can with the resources available. On the other hand, if you get the buy-in, things can be changed very quickly because you don't have a whole chain of command that needs to go. But I think often having the resources to be able to take risk is a luxury. It might be something which everyone thinks, yes, this is work, but this will work. But if there's a risk to implementation, that is a luxury that many people can't necessarily afford to take. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And this is, I mean, on the top of this point, I had a question that normally, if I am having a water solution, for me, islands looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 customers. I would rather not focus on islands. I would rather focus on a big land. But to me here, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, if there is one good water solutions, and if it's well implemented and reliable and easy and stable for a long period of time for 1, 2, 3, 5 islands, mm-hmm. I think they may have chance through your platform, like word of mouth, to be spread across different islands.
I think so. I think you need, like, it's one of those things, if you're able to show a very successful pilot project and give a very good example, then the dominoes fall and you can potentially get a lot of places on board very quickly. The challenge is getting your first foot in the door to show a project and to be able to demonstrate that it works. And I think what you said is true. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You could go and work in a region like the Caribbean or the Pacific, where every country has 100,000, sometimes less people, sometimes more, of course, there are bigger countries. Or you could go to Brazil or Mexico with populations of tens, hundreds of millions. Now, there are pros and cons to both of those. Of course, going to somewhere with a big market is potentially easier, but also has its own challenges as well. Going to a smaller market, often there is, and again, looking at energy, but water as well, the price that people are paying for energy and water is often very high. So there is a big economic opportunity to solve that problem and do it at a way that everyone benefits from. But of course, every island jurisdiction is going to have its own rules, its own local laws, and that is a challenge for entering markets. So we often consult with companies and say, great, the Caribbean looks like a great market for us. But the reality is that each of those jurisdictions have their own cost to entry, and that becomes challenging. There are a lot of efforts to try and harmonize that. And I've seen projects that say, okay, if we can group the islands together as one, then they become one bigger market. And that has worked on some levels, and there've been some efforts to have that local coordination. But still, it can be challenging. And I think the most successful projects have been able to really work with a local partner who one of our main jobs is working with an international company to help identify who are their local partners on the ground in each island that can help them navigate the complexities of that individual place, because going into one island is not going to be the same as going into another. It's balancing these big differences and these shared similarities that we kind of focus on.
So through your platform, is there a chance that a young entrepreneur to present their demonstration in terms of pilot tests, if they have a very good successful story for 6 months or 1 year good technology in some islands, can they use your platform really to show the case?
To present their
case study.
Definitely, yeah. Sorry. We work with companies that are putting forward solutions. And I guess we also play a bit of an intermediary, because we advise governments on potential projects that they can take and they can work with, because often they don't have the resources to vet all the different projects coming through. So we sometimes play that role of trying to pair them. We also run programs that we ask for entries of solutions to tackle a specific problem that an island has. And we encourage as many different private sector companies to enter that. And then we work to identify the one that is going to work in the local context. And then also bring in the different finance components as well, really trying to think about all the different aspects of a project that are necessary. But absolutely, for organizations that think that they can provide solutions for their islands, I've perhaps been quite straightforward in some of the challenges, but there are huge opportunities as well. If you can really solve some of these problems, a lot of people would like to see that. So yes, there are challenges, but there is a road here to really deploy interesting solutions. And I think islands can also present an opportunity to demonstrate solutions that may not yet be financially viable in places where the resources are cheaper. That's what we saw with renewables. Islanders were the early adopters because even though renewables was more expensive for a lot of areas, it was still a lot cheaper for them. And so now, of course, renewable prices have come down to where they're a lot more competitive in many contexts, but they became the first adopters, and that helped to bring the cost down and demonstrate that a transition to a lot of renewable energy was possible.
In terms of opportunities, what are the most pressing water issues facing islands community today?
In terms of water issues, I would say it's in summary of what we've already talked about, it's being able to finance the transition that is needed as the climate conditions are going to change. They're going to need to look at other solutions because rainfall patterns might change, groundwater patterns might change. And it's going to take a lot of money to actually figure out how they adapt to the new reality, whether that's desalinization, which of course many places are looking, or other solutions beyond that.
And then what is your vision? What is the question that I would have to learn from you? I mean, what is your vision for the island innovation, let's say for the next couple of quarter or next couple of years? Where do you see island innovation?
So we're doing more and more work at the COPs. I think we play an important role there for transmitting information. We have our programs with our team spread out in islands all around the world. And I'm looking for us to really be able to regionalize more. So we have this global platform, but also we have programs focused on the Pacific, on the Caribbean, some of these big regions where there is a role for us to play. I think, you know, we've grown in the last 5 years from conception. We've grown hugely and been able to really make impact by talking to and working with these different organizations to help change people's perspective on islands and help islands themselves understand the opportunities to engage globally. So I want us to see continuing to do that, grow the team and implementing and assisting with implementation of more projects.
Great. I mean, my last question, James, what would you share with the audience in terms of, I mean, my audience is different, but one of them is the young entrepreneur coming to the water space. Mm-hmm. So look into your profile. Also, you have been entrepreneur. So you have seen so many things in the water field as well. So what is your, let's say, not piece of advice, but I would say, what is your guidance that you can share with them as a young entrepreneur coming to the water space?
I would say for any company looking into this, to keep an open mind and to think, often the kind of companies I see coming from the water space have amazing minds behind them that have been able to really create revolutionary technology. And I think to echo that point that I said before, technology is only the first part of it. You can have the best technology in the world, but you need to know how to be able to convince people to adopt it. And I do see that too often, that bad technology with good speakers does better than the good technology sometimes. It's an unfortunate reality of it. So thinking about all these components, the financing, the cultural shift that is necessary to adopt new technology, I think is absolutely, absolutely critical. And if that's something that you're working on and interested in doing, then do reach out, because we want to help companies like yourself to figure out how to collaborate with governments and finance institutions to build successful projects.
Thank you very much, James.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.